Welcome to the NDTI podcast series, Talking Inclusion. My name's Drew Edward, and I'm here today with Sue and Crispin, who are going to talk about reasonable adjustments, specifically the A for Adjustments resource that they were developing. We heard a little bit about this last week from Nick, whose story helped to inspire some of the work within the resource. So if I could just start by asking you to introduce yourselves, please.
Hi, yeah, I'm Sue Turner. I'm an associate at NDTI. I've worked for the Learning Disability Public Health Observatory when I was at NDTI as well. I'm a nurse by background.
Thank you. And Crispin.
Hi, I'm Crispin Hebron. I'm a learning disability nurse. I've worked in posts in the NHS, and I've worked alongside Sue in Bristol in the past as well, and I'm also an associate with NDTI.
So tell me a bit about the resource. How did it come about and who commissioned it?
Health Education England commissioned Skills for Care and NDTI, I believe, to provide some focus for frontline health and care staff to improve their confidence and ability to work with people with learning disabilities and autistic people in their day-to-day encounters in their jobs. I think there's plenty of evidence currently and historically, sadly, that people with learning disabilities and autistic people don't always get the best response from health and care services, and often that's down to frontline staff not being especially confident in what they're doing, and that with a little bit of guidance and support, that anybody can work really effectively and meet the needs of people with learning disabilities and autistic people in who need the same services as everybody else. And often it's just the little things that get in the way and can make the biggest difference. So
yes, that's right. And initially, I think they'd asked us to do a resource that covered some of the common health conditions that people with learning disabilities and autistic people experience. We thought about this. There's so much stuff out there already about those things. And actually, we thought it was the reasonable adjustment side of things, the culture of person-centred, thinking about what it is that people need. And so although we've put in some information and also links to additional resources about conditions, the focus became very much about the way that support is offered and the reasonable adjustments that people can make.
The responses are often focused on problems and difficulties and challenges. And we really felt very strongly that we wanted to offer solutions and confidence for people, rather than thinking that this was something really difficult that, you know, people needed special training to do or anything else. So the idea of actually focusing on reasonable adjustments and things that anybody can do a little bit differently to get things right, rather than encouraging people to think about the conditions or the problems that people have or the challenges they might face in just delivering a good service. So that was very much at the heart of us focusing on reasonable adjustment rather than learning disability or autism or associated health problems or challenges or anything else.
And of course, reasonable adjustments is also applicable to anybody. People are providing better support to anybody who needs an adjustment, not just people with learning disabilities or autistic people.
Yeah.
So how did you go about developing the resources or finding out what needed to go in the resources?
We had some tremendous support from colleagues at Skills for Care. Juliet, the senior project manager there, really guided us through looking at what was currently available. We spent a lot of time making sure that we weren't just repeating something that had already been done. We wanted to do something a bit different. We wanted to offer something that complemented what was already there. So we did spend a lot of time at the beginning looking through the vast amount of resources that do actually exist, specifically around health problems and difficulties people face accessing services. And we used that to kind of identify the need for more specific information around reasonable adjustment and the Equality Act, and to give people the confidence that they need, that often they're delivering reasonable adjustments, they're doing things really, really well, they're making changes, doing things differently for people, but to actually put that into a framework and to give it the context of the Equality Act and the sort of human rights focus on things.
And were partners involved in that process?
We've linked, for example, the South West Health Network that I work with NHS England facilitating, which is a network of learning disability practitioners, really. And Crispin, you were part of that network as well at the time, I think, weren't you? So yep. We also were able to test out ideas with that group, you know, is this going to work? And also, that group shares lots of good practice, so we were also able to use a case study that somebody had developed when we were building the resource. We talked to other people as well, didn't we, Crispin?
Yeah, I spent some time with the Learning Disability Acute Liaison Nurses from the Midlands, who have a network there, and we shared our thinking there. Asked them to relate the approach to some of the real life situations that they have supporting people in and out of hospital and while they're in hospital, and the types of difficulties that support staff particularly find that they need to overcome and don't always have the confidence or the right words or the right approach or the right understanding to be able to help services adapt to meet the needs of the individual person, because we're all different, and the people who know individuals the best are the people who know what needs to change. So it was very much a case of trying to support positive communication between services, between the people who need those services and the people who support those people to get the best they can. So it's very much a kind of three-way interaction between people providing services, people needing services, and those who can support them to get the best out of it.
So talking about people who need services and supports, we've already heard from Nick last week how he was involved. How did you involve other people? Who were those groups?
Inclusion Gloucestershire, and I believe Anna shared the thinking with one of the groups that she's involved with.
So a lot of the involvement was from practitioners themselves then?
It was very much through practitioners and the links into kind of direct practice. So as Sue said, the case studies that you'll find in the resource were very much directly from people's experiences, and often those experiences weren't necessarily good experiences, but when what it demonstrates is that with a small change that often is what a reasonable adjustment is, the outcome can be very, very different and much improved. So it was very much through our kind of practice networks, through to people supporting people directly into in their day-to-day lives.
And I find with the work that I do that often people's real life stories are the things that give power to change. So with the stories and the case studies that you were able to share amongst yourselves whilst you're developing it, did that help to crystallize what needed to happen?
I think it certainly grounds it, doesn't it? Because it's saying, so, you know, here's the theory, if you like, of reasonable adjustments. And here's an example of how it can be put into place. And certainly I'm thinking of one of the ones, the one from the Southwest, the acute liaison nurse one. Yeah. I mean, some of them are quite complex. So sometimes it's an easy thing, and sometimes, you know, there's quite a bit of thought that has to go into it. So I think we tried to include, different ones that it's fairly straightforward, and ones where there's got to be quite a lot of coordination of care. So particularly if you're, I think the one from the Southwest was about somebody going in for an operation, then you've got to coordinate things. You know, you've got the anaesthetist, the surgeon, that, you know, sometimes it's a lot of work. But it's really worth it in the end.
And it's really about changing people's attitudes, yeah, and approach and the way they think about what they're doing. There's five sessions that make up the framework. They all start with the letter A, conveniently, which gives us the A for adjustments title. And just looking at those five sort of session headings, it's very much focused on what practitioners can do differently. So, you know, this was very much targeted at the changes that practitioners need to make in their day-to-day approach and their day-to-day attitude and the actions that they're involved in every day. So the vast majority of the engagement we had was with those practitioners and having an understanding of what would be most effective in supporting them and their colleagues to adopt the kind of approaches and attitudes that we know will make a difference.
And so this is coming about at the same time that the Oliver McGowan training is coming out. Do you have any understanding of how they sit alongside each other?
Well, I think we, as we said at the beginning, the adjustments, it's broader. Yes, it is about the adjustments you make for people with learning disabilities and autistic people, but it could be applied much more broadly. It's a much wider topic. My understanding of the Oliver McGowan training is it's more focused on raising awareness about people with learning disabilities.
As Sue says, you know, what we wanted to do was, you know, in no way replicate or duplicate what was going to be delivered through the Oliver McGowan training, but actually provide something that was complementary and supported people. I think, you know, if you go into any training, focused training, you know, the Oliver McGowan training will be, with some confidence that you can approach people and work with people and understand people, rather than going in sort of thinking, actually, I don't know anything about this, so, you know, I need to be trained to work with people with learning disabilities. Actually, with a good understanding of reasonable adjustment and the small differences, then actually you can build on that by learning more about learning disabilities and autism and how that might affect people directly when they're using services.
And you make a good point, Sue, because people do generally think of reasonable adjustments as being only about learning disabilities and or autistic people. But actually, there's a whole load of people that will need reasonable adjustments during their lifetime. We probably all do.
The message in the resource is very much, you know, don't think about people with learning disabilities or autistic people as necessarily people who require specialist services or whose needs are met somewhere else, but actually the same as everybody, and the changes that need to happen are the same for people with learning disabilities and autism. And, you know, bear in mind that the types of disability, you know, the estimate is that 20% of the total population will have a level of disability that's defined by the Equality Act. So, you know, that we're talking about a lot of people. And because of the nature of that disability, those people are likely to need health and social care services up to twice as much as other people in the population. So we're talking about kind of 40% of encounters with with health and social care services are likely to be from somebody with some type of disability. So, you know, when you think about it in that context, anybody working in health and social care on a day-to-day basis is going to be supporting people with a disability. And that will include people with learning disabilities and autism. It'll also include people with learning disabilities and autistic people who have other disabilities, you know, maybe a visual impairment or a hearing impairment, you know, a mental health need, all of which are more common for people with learning disabilities and autistic people. So actually, we wanted people to stop pigeonholing maybe, or, you know, putting people in boxes according to their condition, and just actually start to think about people as people and what we can all do differently to make services and the way we work more inclusive, more effective for people, give people a better experience and a better outcome, regardless of what their disabilities, their abilities or their needs might be.
How is the resource helping to get that message out to health practitioners generally?
We've sent it out, it's gone out to all of the practitioners and through the network, and it's gone on to their learning platform and Skills for Care, of course, you know, because they've got a wide audience.
And obviously it's available on our website too, so people can download it and use it from there.
So what's the response been like? Because obviously this came out during the pandemic, and that might have made things more challenging, or maybe it makes things more appropriate considering some of the stories that we've heard during lockdown. So what's the response been like from practitioners? Have you had any feedback?
People were very keen to have it. So I've because it took a little time to get onto a platform that was accessible to everybody. So, you know, I had quite a few because, you know, is it out yet? Is it out yet? We want to use it. Can we use it with, you know?
So the sorts of responses I've had have been very much welcoming the focus on reasonable adjustment. I think, you know, there's a fantastic energy around the use of reasonable adjustments and people's understanding of how that affects their day-to-day work. And, you know, I really welcome the contribution that this resource has made to the kind of growing attention that people's legal responsibility under the Equality Act to provide reasonable adjustment rather than just focusing on people's disabilities and people's needs. And, you know, we do need to remember that this is a legal responsibility to change things. It isn't something that's nice to do if you've got time. It's actually something that services and organisations have a legal responsibility to provide for people. And if we can help people understand that and feel confident around that, then that is more likely to change the experience of disabled people using services than educating people around the types of condition that might lead to a learning disability or the different terms associated with autism. Because actually, whilst those things have their place on a day-to-day basis, you know, supporting somebody to get the best out of a service, that type of information isn't necessarily the most useful. Whereas understanding how to just change simple things and your legal responsibility to do that as a service, as an organisation, as a practitioner, that's the most important thing. And there is a growing focus across service provision and service structures around that. And I think the pandemic has focused people's attention on that, actually, because people with a disability do need support to have services delivered differently. And so whilst, you know, it's great to see practice changing as a result of the pandemic, and I'm thinking about the availability of support online and perhaps to be able to connect with your GP virtually and applying those sorts of changes and thinking they're going to be okay for everyone rather than thinking about how different people might need to experience their service. I think, you know, I think the pandemic has sharpened people's attention. That's very much what we're trying to do here, is get services to change rather than services expecting people to change.
Yeah, and I think the pandemic has also maybe made people realise that services can change because they've had to change.
Thank you both. That's been really informative. And to remind people, you can access A for Adjustments via ndti.org.uk. Our next episode will be talking about reasonable adjustments in education. I hope you can join us then.